You are listening to episode 421 of the Punk News Podcast. We hate you all. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. We had some technical difficulties, as is the plan. I'm calling it on my cell phone because it's been a lot of snow out here in the eastern part of North America. So I think everybody's at home on the internet downloading Dragon Ball Z, like Adam White says, or downloading this weird... Listen, every time I watch anime, I'm always like, man, I'm going to check out anime, and I'm really going to appreciate anime because I can't stand it. But every 2 or 3 years I watch anime, I'm sorry, people. Anime is not good. It is not good. I'm here with Features. I'm here with actually editor Adam White. Adam White, anime. Are you pro con? I mean, is there any anime that you enjoy? Every time I watch it, I'm like, all right, this is going to be a good anime. And I watch it, and it's two dudes fighting robots again. I don't want to see two giant robots fighting. It's not that interesting. I'm sorry. I'm anti-anime. Adam White, where do you stand on anime?
Ambivalent, I guess. It's not a thing that I encounter. I guess if anyone's listening to this, I'll off the translate John's horrible robot speak for everyone. So we've tried to record this a few times. John is on a cell phone, standing on his roof with like one arm in the air with a metal rod to try to extend the range. But anyways, yeah, so anime is not a thing that I feel like I have had many encounters with since, I don't know, like being a high school student, maybe. But even then, you know, I saw the classics, but it's not a thing that I was ever like a fan of. Like John, like I've seen Akira, you know, I saw Ghost in the Shell, but I haven't seen like whatever the kids watch.
Well, listen, people, prove me wrong. Send me some good anime, and I'll check it out. And none of that suspicious anime, if you know what I'm saying. I went strictly PG-13 anime. Adam White, is my phone still breaking? Is it good now?
It's a little bit fucked up, but that'll just, you know, it's a good
it's manageable.
Good rationale for you to have to shut up a little bit because people won't be able to hear you anyways. So if anyone didn't hear what John said, he wants anime where you know, people are fucking animals and inanimate objects are fucking people and everything is fucking everything. That's what he wants. Just to be clear.
Adam, you know, what's with the nags? Like, you've been nagging me a lot on the podcast lately.
Oh my God. All right. We are keeping this all in the show. John, you just said, your whole, I think it was something about me nagging you, completely broke up into robot nonsense and is going to sound wonderful.
If it's not working out, then you guys do it, and I'll do it. You guys can just do it. All right. Well, Punk News Podcast, I hope it's a good episode. I'll be listening with the rest of you. See you guys later.
John's gone. Oh, shit. All right, Ricky.
Hey.
We're still here. We're gonna see what we can do. All right, so yeah, we're going to talk about a bunch of various things that happened in the past week. Before that, we're going to do a little bit of one-sided record collecting here because I say one-sided in that I don't think that I have perused a store in the last little while. I mean, I'm going to a record show on Sunday, but that is in the future, so I can't do nothing about that.
So
Ricky, though,
me?
you were on video. You were captured.
I was
by
Soul
Stealing.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did. So tell people about this and what they can find it and what it is.
Okay, so first of all, well, to back up real quick, two shout outs on the podcast. I met one of our usual tweeter people that reach out to us on Twitter named Chris. I think he's like SD Red Wings fan. He's out further south than me, but he was at the Dirty Nil show that I happened to review for Punk News last week. Really nice guy. He told me it's a pretty consistent listener. So shout out to Chris. What Adam's talking about is, you know, I've been pushing this book, I'm Out of Here Lately, and that's actually going to press this week to be printed. I'm, you know, relatively friendly with this guy named Matt who lives out in LA, and I always see him at Amoeba Records on Record Store Day, and I've been following his channel called Too Many Records, and I reached out to him. I'm like, hey, can I? He also has a podcast. Maybe I could plug my book. He says, why don't you come on my channel and we'll talk about like your five of your rarest punk records. I said, that sounds fine too. I hate being on camera, but I'll do it. And so that came out, and it's, if you want to look that up, it's just five rare punk rock vinyl records on YouTube. It's Too Many Records. And you have to understand, like, he and I discussed this beforehand, that my choices should be sort of, you know, introductory bands, kind of the basics, because his channel is not very genre specific. It kind of leans on like mainstream pop and hip hop and stuff like that, but he's very into vinyl. So, I got to bring some stuff on there, and, it seemed to get good response. So maybe he'll have me back on. I'll totally do it. But shout out to Matt and Too Many Records too.
Yeah, that was cool. I do not know how I would properly compose myself being on a video show like that. I wouldn't know where to look or to put my arms, or like, I feel like I'd be very conscious of like extremities of my body that are suddenly on video and shouldn't be.
As soon as he turned on the video guy turned on his camera, I just stood still and I made sure just to sit up real straight and keep my arms down. And I also had notes below me on the floor, so I made sure I like had the dates right of stuff and prices and everything. It worked out. His room, though, he has like close to 2,000 records that are packed into this room in a house where he lives. It's amazing how many records he has. I'm hoping I'll be able to go back on. It was a fun time, especially it got more relaxed as it kind of progressed and we got into talking about records. It was the introductory stuff I was kind of weirded out by. But other than that, it was a very good experience and I enjoyed it. And also, I've been following the YouTube channel for a couple of years now, so it was cool to be on.
Did you have to deal? I mean, like, we're pretty much experts at dealing with like asshole reaction people on the internet. But like, do you now have to deal with YouTube commenters?
You know, I looked at the YouTube comments and things seem to be pretty good, surprisingly, because YouTube is has the notoriously worst commenters other than our commenters. But people, the one thing that I thought was a legitimate question, and it wasn't trolling, but people were asking like why I didn't bring any Discord record stuff on. It's because, I mean, I have. You know, Minor Threat and Fugazi and other stuff from Discord in my collection, but they're just not rare. They're just normal pressings, and he wanted rare stuff, so that's what I did. But other than that, people, like, there were a lot of bring him back comments, and overall, it seemed to be fine. There was one guy that said, this is actually funny. He said, Ricky has resting punk face. Which I thought was, I said, okay, that's fine. That's like the worst it got. But after this episode of the podcast goes up, it'll probably, you know, shoot down. It'll probably get progressively worse.
Well, see, that's the thing that I would be like worried about with that. I'd have some strange tick that I'm not aware of. Like, now I'm a person that used to have I don't know what I'd call it because it was different back in the day, but like in like 2011 or so, like I had a video blog kind of thing where I ran around with a camera and like did like 25 episodes or so of this thing that I had concocted. It was not music related at all. but it was very purposefully like, I would turn on the camera, start saying my spiel, and then stop saying my spiel and turn the camera off. So like, I didn't need to just like exist in space while someone else was talking. And I'm worried that like, you know, that all of a sudden, like, you know, the other person would start talking and then something weird that I did not know how it happened would happen. Like one of my eyes would slowly start to get bigger than the other one or something. And I'm like, oh fuck. So yeah. So, oh God, like, kudos to you for having to like sit and be quiet. Cause I wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, also, they did a really good, I'm pretty sure we sat there talking for about a half hour and it's only about a 14-minute video. They did a lot of really good editing, and also he even admits in the beginning that he doesn't know a lot about punk rock. So he let me take the reins for a good chunk of it. And I really tried to be as basic as possible. I brought a Ramones record, Dead Kennedys, a NoFX 7-inch, like that kind of stuff, just to, you know, and then I just introduce for the people that are watching, just kind of introduce them as if they had never heard punk before. That was kind of the goal.
Yeah. And it's weird seeing it from that perspective, because like, we're so in our own universe that to have that conversation with someone, it's funny.
What's also funny is like, there was one, he mentioned that he wanted me to come back to do like a obscure band. I'm like, what does obscure mean to me anymore? Like, I don't know. I mean, is Nightbirds an obscure band to the rest of the world? I don't know. So that'll be interesting. I might just do some really deep unknown bands that aren't like signed or something like that. We'll see.
Yeah. To really figure out what obscure means anymore is completely like not a thing that I have any quality to judge. And yeah. I realized actually that I have no quality I have no ability to orient myself back towards like what anyone outside of my head is listening to at this point. And like, I've gone down such like a strange road of like noise bands and things like that I'll go and I'll tune into something that is, I guess, like conventionally punk rock that I should have by all means completely been into and like in past years would have been. And it's not clicking, and it's a really weird, it's a really weird thing that's happening to me. I'm not going to hop into the story right now. So like Bad Religion, they have a record single that came out that recently called My Sanity. Mm-hmm. You can go find it on YouTube or whatever. it's apparently from whatever the upcoming record that they have is, but I don't think they've actually announced what that record is.
No, they've been posting pictures on like Instagram of them in the studio and stuff like that, but they haven't done any, they haven't like announced anything, but this is like the third or fourth single that they put out this year.
Yeah. So there was that Kids Are Alright one, and then there was something that I have blanking on and don't actually know if I'm listening to, but then there's this one and I remember like I went and I turned it on and I thought to myself like, oh, this is kind of sing-songy and
yeah.
it's not very impactful, but you know, I'm just not in the mood for it. Right. So I turned it off, went about my life. And then I saw some other publication writing about it and they were they said this could have been a Bad Religion song from any era of the band. It is just, you know, completely what everyone loves and expects from Bad Religion, and you know, just like it's you know, just a home run straight out the park. Like they were all pumped about it, and I was like, really, holy shit. And I went back and I listened to it again today, and I'm like, God, this has no teeth. It feels like it has no teeth to me, right?
Well, I thought that this song was like it was a very standard Bad Religion song, while the song before this was actually called The Profane Rites of Man, which I really liked. That was one that came out before this.
Yeah, so I don't know, like, have I like fucked up my ability to listen to bands that aren't just like like discordant squelching noise that like now when I go back to just like a melodic punk band like Bad Religion, I'm just like yawning because that kind of sucks. I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to break myself. Is that evidence of like my tastes drifting now, or is it just, you know, I'm totally fine and this is a boring song? I don't think
it's fair to base it on this song in particular, My Sanity, because it's, I mean, at least from my perspective, and I mean, pretty much what's going on in the comments too, like people seem to like it, but they're not saying it's the best Bad Religion song to come out in a long time. Like this one is, it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty standard. I recently actually re-listened to, and I hadn't listened to it in a while, but True North is a really good Bad Religion record. So I would base your whole dilemma on that instead, because that record rips. It's a great Bad Religion song. Album, sorry.
Yeah, and I keep thinking back to when Process of Belief came out, and like the first, like Supersonic, the first song on Process of Belief, it's so striking, right? Like it's just it's arresting. It's fast and buzzing and like immediately grabs you and pulls you in, and it's just one of these like holy shit, this band still has it kind of songs. And yeah. I haven't got that from any of this new stuff, and I don't know what's going on. I'm not sure. Well, I don't want to shit on Bad Religion either, because like they're like one of the most important bands in my universe, but like I'm not there yet. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know. I also want to hear these songs in the context of the full album before I make a full decision on them.
That might be it. Like a lot of these sound like album tracks to me. Like, you know, this is side one, track four kind of thing.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just the way they're trickling them out is just not clicking to me, but
it's weird. Well, it's weird because they're trickling, like you said, these songs out, but there's no release to look forward to yet. There's no full length yet.
Yeah, and it's, I feel like in their past three or four full lengths, whenever they've came out, they've been fairly,
it was very straightforward.
Well, but they've been like fairly consistently branded, I feel. The Process stuff all kind of had the same sort of like look and feel and vibe when it was being released, and like and the True North stuff, and especially the what was the one in between those?
Christmas songs came out.
Red and Black Burning
thing. Yes, I know what you're talking about. Something a Man. Oh no. This is embarrassing.
Hold on. This is called Adam Looks at iTunes.
Oh, shit.
This is fun for everyone to listen to.
Oh, yeah. This is great. Oh, it's Descent of Man.
No, sorry. I was thinking Empire Strikes First. Or New Map. New Maps of Hell is the cover art I was thinking of.
Like, oh, New Maps of Hell is fantastic. I think that's one of their best records. I think it's fantastic.
But all of those, I feel like I had more of a narrative leading into those records coming out than what I have right now. And these are just sort of just like random, oh, here's a Bad Religion song that is seemingly disconnected from everything. It's, I don't know. It's a strange strategy. It's not clicking for me.
Yeah. I'm sort of lost at this point too,
but I don't know. I'm hoping it clicks for me. So
should I do my records, or do you just want to skip that?
No, do your records. Okay. So yeah. So talk about some stuff. What do you got? What's cool?
Okay. So, got the old Instagram ready to go. And so I'll go back to October, cause I haven't been to a record store in a while, but, I did go in San Francisco, but I think I talked about those I already got those. So I'll start with, October 5th, I think I saw the Flatliners, and, I didn't buy anything there. I think I got a shirt. I got my black copy of Cavalcade signed by the band, which was really cool of them to do. Then later in October, I did not know about this band at all. And I hate myself for it, but this, the Shook Ones new album Body Feel is so good. If you like Dillinger Forb with a little bit more teeth, this is kind of what it is. I got the black, version for, because it was more limited, it was just 200 copies, but it was black. It came shipped totally fine. But it's a great record. Then I finally got Master Volume by The Dirty Nil, which I got signed at the show I was at last week. But this one is like the Dynalone Records store exclusive. And what they did was the band said, like, sign up for our newsletter, and we'll tell you at midnight when the record is ready to be pre-ordered. And so I got this one at, they're only 100. It was like, it's supposed to be 100 in like a black and gray swirl. It only came out in gray, but it comes with like this little like ribbon, that record ribbon, comes out that says like swirl 100, hand numbered and all that stuff. But they only let 20 out to be sold online. So I got one of the 20, that got sold online, and then the other 80, I guess, got sold at the Dynalone Records store.
I was about to ask whether that was my copy, but it can't be my copy because mine didn't have any special shit like that. Dynalone has a cool thing that they are doing around here, where they have a, I don't know if it's an RV or if it's a trailer or whatever, but they have this like little mobile record store that drive around to like music festivals or to various places. Like when I was at that Oktoberfest at the Bose Brewery, they had it there, where it was like, they kind of like, they drive it up and they park it, and they lower a, I think they have like a detachable ramp that they put on the front of it that gives them a little bit of like outdoor display space, but also like, I guess, makes it like wheelchair accessible or whatever. But the there's like a little ramp that goes up to it, and then they have like, you know, like 8 or 10 bins worth of kind of Dynalone stuff, and then some other than records, like merchandise and things like that. But they have this little like pop-up store thing that they drive around, and it's but yeah, that's, I bet you it is, you know, used in those types of environments. Speaking of Dynalone and rare shit that they're releasing, I was totally disinterested in all this Record Store Day stuff, but they have two Attack in Black records that they're putting out. And just to make sure I'm not a complete dummy, this hasn't happened yet, has it?
What, Record Store Black Friday Record Store Day? No, it's on the 23rd.
It's like in a week or something.
Third, yeah, it's coming up.
Okay, so they have two Attack in Black records that they're putting out this year. The first is a reissue of The Curve of the Earth, which is their, an album that the band put out almost like aggressively to counter program against Marriage, which was their kind of like big debut record. So Marriage came out, it had a bunch of, like legit kind of like radio singles on it, and it was getting a little bit of play on Much Music when it was out. But the band had, for their own reasons, but in that, like, A, they grew away from that material, but B, there's all sorts of stories about them having a hard time in producing that record. I think, like, mm-hmm. they had to go back to the well and re-record a bunch of stuff a couple times. I think there was a little bit of a little bit of tension to try to get it I don't want to put this on Dynalone, but like maybe like get it how the label wanted, or get it how whoever wanted it, right? But when Marriage came out, the band was just sort of done with it. So they went and they sat down in like, you know, in someone's living room and got a 4-track recorder and recorded The Curve of the Earth, which is just like a bunch of strange, like wonderfully strange little solo raw songs. And it kind of foreshadowed like everyone's career after that band broke up. It's like, Dan Romano's entire like strange alt country stuff that he's been doing, all like the aggressive psychedelia he's been into, like Ian Kehoe's like guitar rock stuff that he was doing with Marine Dreams, Spencer Burton's solo stuff as Grey Kingdom, like all that stuff was sort of like previewed on that record, where they were just like doing something for themselves completely solo. So that record came out like 3 or 4 months after Marriage did. And you really got the feeling that like it came out because the band wanted it out. I can't imagine that was part of Dynalone's plan at the time, because it was sort of going to cannibalize the big release that was supposed to have the singles on it. But that is it's an important record for me. It's one that I absolutely had to go like find on Discogs and pay way more money than I paid for anything else to get a copy of. But that is getting reissued by Dine Alone. So I guess there's not particular bad blood there, but being reissued by Dine Alone on Record Store Day, along with like a live record that no one's heard before. So now I have to go find those. I have to go be one of the line people.
It's funny when it comes to Black Friday Record Store Day, I like never go, but this is the year I actually might, because there are a couple things in there for me that I want to get. Like there's like that Dead Kennedys thing and a Rage Against the Machine record as well. So I might go, maybe I'll just snipe one on Discogs. I don't know.
What else you got on the gram there?
On the gram, I got Antarctico Vespucci's Love in the Time of Email, which is their best stuff to date. I love this record. It's really, really good. This one's on with black with like, they call it Starburst, but it's like black and pink splatter all over the place, which is really cool. And then we're going to be talking about this record in a little bit, if you pre-ordered this record, it came like a few weeks ago. I got the Neighborhood Brats new album Claw Marks. Holy shit, this is a good record. I mean, this is going to be, I can see this being in my top 10, I think, this year. It came on Orange, I think, with like 200 on Orange. So I got one of those. I got Direct Hits' new album, Crown of Nothing. And that came with like this crazy slip mat. Yeah. And I opted not to get, there were options to get like a comic book, a four installment comic book series. I just decided not to do that because I'm not really a comics guy. Then Debt Neglectors, new EP, The Kids Are Pissed. That came on like this picture disc, which is cool. And it came with like a little flexi as well. I also saw The Damned a couple weeks ago with Radke and The Darts. The Damned were phenomenal as usual. And I picked up The Darts 7-inch off that new one that came out on Alternative Records. That's like bright yellow. I reviewed this show too, for Punk News recently. I bought my very first VIP ticket to a punk show, and, it was for this, for the Menzingers, Tiny Moving Parts and, Daddy Issues. And, I mean, the show was fantastic, but what was cool about the VIP package was they played a 6-song acoustic set before the actual show started. They gave everyone that showed up, that bought the VIP ticket, a gold pressing of their new 7-inch, that's signed by the band. And then, you just got early access to the venue as well, which is cool.
Is this the thing that happens?
I don't know. It wasn't a lot. For what this was, it was not a lot of money either. Like, it was a really good deal, really great value. So I got it. And then also they had a different variant of that, of the toy Soldier 7-inch that they had. Like, there's a white with splatter one, so I picked that one up too. But it was, I mean, it was awesome. And they also were cool enough to sign my Record Store Day version of Chamberlain Waits on blue vinyl, which was really cool too. That was, I mean, God, that's one of the, it's such a great show. And then I got Laura Jean Grace and the Devouring Mothers record on red vinyl from the Bloodshot Records pre-order. That record is quite good. It's different, but there's so many different genres in it, but it's really cool. It's something you need to kind of sit with, but I really, really enjoyed it after two listens. Then Natterers finally got Head and Threatening Attitude on orange vinyl. That was limited to 100 on orange. And then at the Dirty Nil show that I was at, I picked up the Bathed in Light and 7-inch and the That's What Heaven Feels Like 7-inch on black vinyl,
which has a cover of
Satan.
No. Like what cover songs on the B side? You must know.
Oh shit. Hang on a second. I don't know if, are they cover songs or are they just B-sides?
No, they're covers. They're covers.
Okay, hang on a second. Let me get to my record shelf here. Hang on a second. Get the box of 7-inches.
You should know this. It's important.
I only listened to them once because I was only able to listen to them this week. But let me just go through this. Direct hit. Sturdy. Okay, so the first one. So that's what Heaven Feels Like has. Oh my God. It's a Ooh What Tonight?
Oh, Jesus Christ, Ricky. It's Oh What a Night!
Oh What a Night. I'm sorry.
It's Oh What a Night by the Halifax-based can rock 80s hair band April Wine. Oh, you should know about this. The other one is a Bowie song, I think. That's not important. April Wine. It's really...
Hang on a second. It's Bathing Light and then Queen Bitch. Is the one that's on Bathing Light. Sorry, I thought it was like some like, you know, First Nations word from Canada. I didn't know these things.
No, I am so happy that they recorded that as a cover because I saw them play played a New Year's show in Hamilton on New Year's, right? So they played a New Year's show and they kind of randomly broke into that cover and I don't think they had ever performed that before, but they really joked when they started playing it that they were doing that song like at the behest of someone in their circle, like at the behest of like, you know, a merch guy or a tour manager or the guy that runs the bar or something like that. And it's like in Canada, that's one of those classic CanCon songs that everyone hates, but is always on the radio because it's a Canadian song and there's like a quota and, you know, everyone is so fucking sick of it and everything. But to hear their version of it, all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, I kind of like this song.
So I've just embarrassed myself in front of the whole country. Awesome.
The whole country of Canada for not knowing this awesome. Dumb April Wine song.
Okay. And God, so just a few more and then we'll get into the news. I got, this arrived yesterday, Useless IDs, Seven It's From Hell on white with red splatter vinyl. Then the Swinging Utters, Nothington 7-inch, from Red Scare called Bird Party that just came in. It's on green vinyl. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm looking forward to it because the new Swinging Utters record killed. And then last, I got to just give a shout out to Pirates Press Records because they sent me a couple of albums. The Ratchets, First Light, which came on this crazy, like, yellow, translucent yellow, red, and orange vinyl. And then the Noise Mass Apathy single. It's like a 12-inch single, but, like, the rest, like, the outer rim of it has bullets. Like punched into the outer rim of the record, so it's really just a 7-inch kind of, I guess, but it's a full 12-inch that comes in the package. So I'm explaining it badly. It's on my Instagram, just take a look at it. It's really cool. Or actually we you can see it on Punkies. We did a story on it. Anyway, that is my record collection since April, not April, October, and we can move on to whatever you want to do now, Adam.
Well, you had talked about Claw Marks, the Neighborhood Brats record. So why don't you play a song from that and tell some people about it?
Sure. Let me get to that story because I am. Okay. So we'll do this. Hang on a second. Okay. Yeah, Neighborhood Brats put out a new record called Claw Marks, and it is awesome. I think New Noise debuted the whole thing. I think it comes out November 16th through Dirt Cult Records. Yes, I am correct there. I mean, it's like some really hard-hitting, not super melodic punk, but it's kind of melodic and kind of jangly guitars. There are two songs now on their Bandcamp that you can listen to, and I'm not really super familiar with this band. I made sure to pre-order it after hearing the two songs that were made available, and apparently they're local here, so I'm gonna or they're somewhat local, I guess. But they're going to be playing with Nightbirds on December 5th. And I am so stoked, not just to see Nightbirds now, but to catch Neighborhood Brats for the first time. Adam, I don't know if you were able to listen to any of this.
I have heard a couple of the songs when we previewed them a little while ago, and I was into them. It was cool. Dirt Cult is a cool label, and everything that they release is generally worth checking out. So this is right up that alley.
Yeah. So do you want me to just play a song?
Play a song. Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, again, I've been able to sit with this record for a while. I've been spinning it a lot in either on my turntable or in my car too. But I'm going to play one of my favorite songs from it. This is called Misery Parade by Neighborhood Brats from their new album, Claw Marks. Here it is.
All right, that was Neighborhood Brats. We're going to talk about some of the other stories that came out this week. But I feel that in John's honor, because I think he really wanted to do it.
Oh, yeah.
We should punt on the threatened story.
I'm following your lead on this one.
All right. Let's move that. That is going to be a John Gentile story for when he has working internet next week, because I feel like he really wanted to get into that one.
Yeah, that, I mean, that one's insane.
So, let's shuffle around a little bit what we're going to talk about here then. So we can pick and choose, I think, what makes sense here. I really want to talk about this Hot Water Music Tour for a second, because a lot of people that I was contemporaneous with in the early days of punk news, this is a big deal. So that band is celebrating 25 years together, and they're going to celebrate that by playing a tour that's going to have them play two night stands in, what is it, six or seven cities in the US on both coasts. And in those two night stands, on the one night, they're going to play in its entirety Caution, and then the other night in its entirety No Division. So this is like my era of Hot Water Music, and No Division would have been right before I got into them. It was a record that they had come out in 1999 on Some, but it was the band returning from like a time when in the late 90s they had kind of broken up had their original era had come to a conclusion. Mm-hmm. And prior to No Division, the band was, I think, very much seen as a as an emo band, but like from the 90s. Really? Yeah, but like wow. but from the 90s, from like the mid 90s emo perspective, like from what that term meant pre screamo, pre Victory Records, pre Vagrant Records, like pre any of those labels releasing stuff by, you know, like so much of what we thought of as emo in like the early 2000s was really as a result of like bands like Taking Back Sunday and Thursday, right, and stuff like that becoming big. Mm-hmm. But like that was after, and there was a time when, you know, like Hot Water Music was, and bands that kind of sounded like that, that were from the No Idea family, were, you know, totally referred to as emo without anyone really batting an eye on it. And No Division was a point where they became a little bit more of a straight ahead rock band, I think. It was a little bit, you had a little bit of that happen with, what's the name of their big record before that? What's the record called? Like Fuel for the Hate Game had a little bit of that, but No Division, I think, really kind of like took a step from being this Discord style emo band with dueling guitars and like a really murky mix and just everything kind of dirty, to being a little bit more of straight ahead punk band. And then that was the record before they signed to Epitaph. When they signed to Epitaph and they put out A Flight and a Crash, I remember distinctly that like a lot of like the old school Hot Water Music people that were hanging around the punk news at the time were incensed about it. Like they were not happy, really, that all of a sudden this band that was their, that was their darling band that they had been following for years and years and years was suddenly on a big mean label like Epitaph and releasing like clean production rock songs. Like it was an aberration, right? So they're not playing A Flight and a Crash on this tour, but they are playing Caution, which is the record that was immediately after that. And it was really, I think, the peak of that band suddenly becoming like a big ass rock band. And you think about like all of, like a lot of the songs that were on Caution, and they're like, I'm Remedy, right? Like the first song that was on Caution, like where it is like, a full throttle. Like it's even in the lyrics, right? Like I need a remedy of diesel and dust, right? Like it is that band becoming like all of a sudden like a big muscular, you know, headlining rock band in a way that they had never really been before. So it's cool that they're kind of playing these two records out on tour. And if you were like a late 90s, early 2000s Hot Water Music person like I was, that would be really cool to go and see one of these. That said, I'm not near any of these things. They're playing two nights in Los Angeles, two in San Francisco, two in Brooklyn, two in Jersey, two in Philly, two in Denver, and then Richmond for two
in
nights.
2020.
Fuck, 2020, Jesus Christ. Yeah, so these tour dates are throughout 2019 and into 2020. So the LA dates, which are the nearest ones to now, are in March. So LA, San Francisco are in March, Brooklyn and Jersey in April. What is it, like Philly, June, Denver in July. So Jesus, Richmond. That's
2020.
That's the first 2020 date that I think we posted on Punk News ever. So anyways, this is coming up. It's cool. That's my era of Hot Water Music. I have a Hot Water Music Caution hoodie that I still wear around that I haven't destroyed. So I'm stoked for that.
Yeah, I got my ticket to the Caution show in Los Angeles yesterday.
That, you know, if I had to pick between one of the two, I would totally do the Caution show. That was
right.
There's a lot of people with a lot of strong feelings about this. I think if Heisel was on here, he would be all on No Division. But we're going with caution here.
I just, you know, it's funny because, like, well, I have two questions about this. One relating to the LA shows, and then the other one relating to the band in general. But they tried when they played here in January, they were supposed to play the Echoplex, and then Chris Waller like had to like take a break from touring, and then that got canceled. Then they moved it to the bigger region. I wonder if that's going to happen. I kind of hope it does, because the Echoplex is a good venue. It's just it is impossible to find parking there. So I'm hoping they move it to the region again. The other thing is Chris Waller going to be at these shows? Because the last two times I've seen Hot Water Music, it's been Chris Creswell from the Flatliners filling in for him. He's done a phenomenal job. Don't get me wrong, but I like, is the original band going to be doing the full lineup going to be doing this?
Well, so as I understand it, and I don't feel like I got a real statement out of anyone at the time, but like through the grapevine, yeah. Wallard was out due to like anxiety issues or something right. like that, right? Like, so he, so given like that this is the big 20th anniversary thing, and that, you know, there's quite a bit of time between now and March. Mm-hmm. If I was a gambling man, I would say he was going to be there.
Right.
And, you know, and perhaps they're, you know, there's a good reason why the shows are spaced out and made to be these big event things. Like, is it takes a little bit of the tour out of the tour, you know, like they're going to go to LA, you know, get a hotel room, be there for a couple nights. It's not going to be them, you know, in a van driving from city to city or anything like that. So that's got to change the environment into which you're exposed. So,
yeah, for sure.
But I don't know. We haven't really heard too much from I think anyone in their camp regarding what Chris's status is. But I mean, I've got to imagine he'd want to be there, right?
I'm hoping he's there. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this. And also, we don't know who the openers are, which I'm really excited to see, because usually, I mean, again, I've seen Hot Water Music probably four or five times. Three of those times, Dead to Me is open. So I'm crossing my fingers for Dead to Me.
They're definitely a band that has like a crowd, right? Like they would have like they have like certain fans that I would totally imagine, or certain fans or certain bands that they've played with over the years that they would want to make sure are involved in their stuff. So here's hoping to that. Which of these other stories do you think we should pick and choose from, Ricky? Anything here that does Angel Dust mean anything to you?
I mean, I can talk about, like, John was asking, like, why people are suddenly, what's it, like, interested in this band.
Let's give him the story, and then you can tell. Okay. So here, let me lead in here. So there's a punk band from Baltimore called Angel Dust, in which the S is a dollar sign. And they have announced that they have signed to Roadrunner Records. The band has two new tracks that went up with the announcement. The songs were called Big Ass Love and Take Away the Pain. You can find those on Punk News if you want to go listen to them. They're currently touring with Every Time I Die, Turnstile, and Vain. And they'll also be playing Every Time I Die's Tid the Season show in December.
Yeah.
So before the story popped into my universe, I was not aware of the band Angel Dust. So why is this a big deal? Why is this worth discussing?
I feel like this band, I mean, I'm just looking at the comments and it seems like people seem to be pretty okay, pretty enthused about this band. What's interesting is, like, you know, when John brought this story up, he's like, why, like, what's going on with this band? And the only reason why I had found out about them was just because I'm pretty sure I was the one that posted about the Every Time I Die's Tid the Season show. Like, I hate saying that. And I think that tour that they're on. And so, like, I just thought they were an opening band. I listened to the songs. They were fine, kind of a little on the bordering the folk punky side, kind of. I don't know. But this band to me just to me seem to have come out of nowhere. But I mean, they're getting signed to Roadrunner, so they must have a decent following. I'm kind of at a loss for words now. I really wasn't aware, but that the only reason why I know is just because I've posted stories about them.
Yeah, they are. I was not aware that they were a band that was a big deal to people. The songs were not clicking for me, but it might be for the exact same reason that Bad Religion song didn't click for me, is that everything I listen to these days is unlistenable. So to actually listen to something that has like melody in it does not click. So
I'm just looking at their Facebook page. I mean, they have like 18,500 people like the page. I have like 10 people that I know on Facebook that seem to be fans of them. I mean, this might just be one of those bands that just sort of pops up and will continue to grow fast.
Does Roadrunner Records, and I'm always curious whenever they come up, does Roadrunner Records have any meaning to you? Are they a label that has a personality that you can discern? Because over the past, I don't know, 20 or so years of me being in this, that a band has signed to Roadrunner, it's never struck me as a... It's always struck me as like a business move, but never one where I've got turned around and gone like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, like Roadrunner. That's a cool lineup to be a part of. Like it has no personality to me.
Well, and I can kind of tell you why it might not. It's because they are owned by, I mean, this is a major label. This is owned by Warner. I don't really follow Roadrunner Records either. I mean, I agree they don't have much of a personality in the way like something basic like, you know, like Asian Man does, or actually Polyvinyl's begun to have one, at least in my musical world.
Polyvinyl has crept into your musical world, but they're totally a label that's had a personality. But
yeah,
just
no, that's
like,
what I mean. Yeah.
But like Roadrunner is a label that's released fucking like Nickelback records and a bunch of rap metal and. Sure. Yeah.
So no, this doesn't really mean anything to me. It's oh god, this is it. It seems to be like, what's that label? Sumerian. Sumerian. They do like Body Count.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like that. Like this seems to be in the more like metal / core-ish kind of realm.
Yeah, Roadrunner is not. I mean, maybe no one cares anymore about labels except for me. So, it probably doesn't matter too much. Let's talk a little bit about this movie that you can go see 6 minutes of. Jesse Michaels, you know, he of Op Ivy, he of Classics of Love, he of Kamen Rider. Mm-hmm. He has he's released the first part of a 2-part short film called The Corridors, and it is suitably weird, like the other Jesse Michaels shorts and things like that we've shown on Punk News before. This one has a cool little like you connection, I think, in that it's got your buddy Brad Logan,
who I didn't see in this. I only saw part of this, but I maybe he's in episode 2.
Yeah, so Brad Logan of Left Over Crack and Rats in the Wall is among the cast for this. So it is I don't want to give film criticism on here, but Jesse has been making these like low budget homemade narrative films and that have like I like a tangential like musical aspect to it, in that like there's often music people that are involved in them, but even something like this that's scored, it's not like Michaels is scoring it himself. Like he's in it for the film, clearly, not for the music end of it.
Yeah.
But so there's this.
I mean, this was weird, but like in a cool way. It was kind of like a sci-fi sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's less strange than some of the earlier things. Like, it's not that there was one that we previewed a while ago that was just like people barfing paint onto each other. Yeah. This is far more of a narrative structure than that. But in any case, if you want to see what Jesse Michaels' Vop Ivy is up to and what weird things are going on in his head, you can go check out this film. If you are to like search it on YouTube or anything like that, it is called The Corridors. And is specifically The Corridors episode 1 right now. So you can go check that out. Ricky.
Hmm.
I'm going to play a song, but is there anything else that we really want to talk about this week, or should we just call it?
I mean, do you want to just kind of end with, I mean, we took this out, but do you want to end with the Nightbirds?
Yeah, throw it back in. Sure.
Okay, I'll throw it back in.
We have to find it now. We'll just like...
No, I got it.
All right, cool.
This was just really cool, and I'm hoping they do this when I see them in December, but Nightbirds performed I Want to Live by the Ramones at one of their recent shows. The performance took place on November 10th, 2018 at Asbury Park Brewery in Asbury Park, New Jersey. Their band is currently, they're kind of pushing Roll Credits, which came out this year through Fat Records. And you can find the video of them playing the Ramones tune on Punk News in the article. I mean, this was cool. They did the Suicide Commandos cover on the record. I wonder how many covers they're doing in their set now. I thought this was cool. I mean, I know Brian is a pretty big Ramones fan. I mean, to the point where they had CJ, do guest vocals on their last record. So, I don't know, not much to say.
You should go watch it. I mean, it's a nicely filmed video. It might be filmed to someone's phone, because who knows, phones are getting good, but it is of better quality than we usually see for these things. I've never seen a band break out a Ramones cover where it has not been delightful. And the coolest thing is that I feel like bands that have no obvious link to that sound can still do Ramones covers, and it is delightful.
And at the same time, though, like, they chose one that like wasn't Blitzkrieg Bop or Sheena Is a Punk Rocker, which I thought was nice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm going to qualify that, actually. I don't want to hear anyone play another cover of Sheena. Like, Tom Waits, I'm sorry. But I've heard enough. I feel like I could do without Blitzkrieg, Sheena, or...
Judy.
Yeah, what else? I was going to say, like, Beat on the Brat, I could deal without.
Bonzo Goes to Bitbert.
No, I love that song.
I love that song.
I'm pretty sure that when I was in university, the Weaker Thans and the Constantines played in like the basement of my university center, and the Cons played a cover of Bonzo Goes to Bitburg, and it just blew my mind. Really? Oh, it was so good. But yeah, so, I think that, like, let's say anything obvious off of their first record, let's leave those ones alone. But you could be anyone and just like fucking throw a Ramones cover in there. It's good. It's like saying, like, do you want chocolate on this? It's like, of course I want chocolate on this. Put some chocolate on this. Parmesan cheese would have been a better example, because that's more obviously put on things in restaurants than chocolate. But hey, speaking of things that people might like, but I don't know. Here's the thing. I'm going to play it for you anyways. So there's a band out of Montreal, I believe, called Bleu Nuit, BLEU, the French blue. They have a record that is coming out in the spring, and I'm going to figure out the exact time and date of this. Hold on. Blah, da, da, da. So the record that they have coming out is called... It's called Commemoration. I'm not going to try to pronounce that in French. There's an accent aigu over the E after the M's in there. So if you want to pronounce that to yourself in French at home, listener, go ahead. It's not my not my exact forte, if anyone's figured out my butchering of French on this show. They have this like 2.5 minute single that they've released from it, which is called Le Même Décor, and it is just an incredibly cool song from the way that it is crafted. It's short, but it has a gigantic bridge in the middle of it, which just has all these weird little off-kilter diversions in it. It has a bit of a moody post-punk vibe, probably not too dissimilar from, say, like what Preoccupations is doing right now, but, you know, en français. So the band, they had recorded with a producer, who was it, Julien Minot, who is of a Montreal band called Malajube that was pretty cool. And so they have this record coming out. It's called Commemoration. It's coming out on Michelle Records in, the spring. That is a label that has a bunch of actually really cool francophone kind of like noise punk bands out of La Belle Provence, like bands like Corridor and Vic Time, and so they're cool. So this is a song from Blue Nuit, from their new record, which is coming out next spring. It is called Les Mêmes Discours. I don't know. I can't actually pronounce these things. I'm just making it sound like it. Anyways, check it out. All right, I'm back. After we're done this podcast recording, I'm going to totally go ask my French wife to pronounce this for me, and then I'll tell her how I did it, and she'll be like, "You're an idiot. Why did you try that on a podcast?"
Good. You know, we really made ourselves look dumb in this episode to the Canadians. At least I did. I don't know. I have to do more Spanish down here, so I don't. I can't say what you did was wrong or right, so I have no input for that.
I mean, it's not a grave a crime as not knowing some dumb hair metal band from the 80s.
You know what? The Dirty Nil covered Surrender by Cheap Trick when I saw them in June, and that was really cool.
Their cover of that is good, but that song, speaking of songs I don't want to hear people cover anymore, is a song I don't want to hear people cover anymore. Because I feel like there was a time where there was a Less Than Jake cover of Surrender, It may have been off of their Goodbye Blue and White Odds and Sods collection that they had come out in like the late 90s, early 2000s. And then not too long after that, there was a Rise Against cover of it. Was there not? Was that like the secret song at the end of their record? Am I wrong?
You know what? That is a band I've not been able to get into. And I've seen them twice, but I do not know that.
Oh, let's just say I'm right, because
okay,
maybe I'm right. I don't know, but there was like a couple Cheap Trick songs at least that were just being like kicked around between like a bunch of bands that I had listened to all at the same time, and I feel like there was a point where I was like, never again do I want to hear anyone cover Surrender, and then the Nil did, and I'm like, oh, I really like you guys. Why don't you do this? So but
well, their covers, they really stripped it down. I thought they did a really, really good job on it, and then, but when you hear it live, it's pretty magical.
Did Rise Against cover Surrender? God, this is gonna kill me. Well, people at home, you don't have to listen to me, look more things up on Google. So, oh look, Anti-Flag did a cover of it. So in any case, if you want to send us email, it is podcast@punknews.org. Ricky and I are going to get in the hovercraft and go to John's house and fix his internet or undig him from the snow or whatever has sidelined him. And I guess we'll be back in a week.
Sorry, Canada.